So welcome back to Pax Europiana, to our debate about European economic reform and European prosperity. What are the most important issues when it comes to economic reform and why countries and regions are rich? I talked in the first part, in the 7.1, I talked about security, NATO, and personal and public security alliance system, how that is so important. And now I will talk about regional economic integration systems, basically the European Union or similar systems, why they matter so much. And here the question is, why does a customs union matter so much? What is the difference and what is the historic relevance of that? And why it really makes such a big difference? And it really does. So the second most important next to security is to be in a system which is really has efficiency, has all the regulatory standards which are needed for a modern market economy, and which doesn't impose a lot of internal borders and customs. Let me make the example historically. I think it's the most wonderful example of the German unification in the 19th century, when suddenly many smaller countries, which had all internal borders, it was totally, the economic space was totally cut in tiny pieces. So meaning that goods and people had to cross many smaller borders between the various German principalities. That was for historic reasons, but obviously it was a major economic blockade. It was a real hassle for the exchange of goods. And also with these borders came checks, sanitary checks, and also customs costs, basically. Time lost, cost for the consumer. The businesses didn't have the full possibility of a bigger market. And that's one basic truth in economics, that the bigger a market, the more people are there, the more opportunities are there, the more ideas are there, the more workforce is there, the more capital can be accumulated, and the better it functions simply, because there is no blockage on the opportunity, and there is more interconnectivity between ideas and various people. For example, there can be certain raw materials in certain areas, the productivity of the communication lines, and also this efficiency is better in a what I call a continental union. This is also one of the reasons for this enormous economic miracle, which is the United States of America. Because in this really fast-track unification process, in their separation from the United Kingdom, they have gone through all these stages of free trade agreement, customs union, internal market, currency union, political union, in the fast track of a constitution, basically. It was an amazing process. And they had no boundaries, of course, Canada and Mexico, but they had this huge continent-wide economic space, which was within one jurisdiction, which within one customs union, within one internal market system. And this is an amazing system, and that was why America then had this enormous rise of prosperity after the Civil War to the First World War and beyond, obviously. But in this phase, unbelievable progress, because the whole possibilities of a continental customs union and the one regulatory system was given for them by the political conditions, and in Europe it was never the case. I gave you the German example. I'm talking now about the Germany from 1870 to 1914. But there's other examples, also negative examples. Look, for example, how terrible the situation also after the Second World War, after the First World War was, when the Austrian-Hungarian common economic space, the empire, one currency. They had even some customs union, customs issues, actually, the Hungarians. But nevertheless, I don't want to go into details of the history of the Austrian-Hungarian monarchy. But imagine when it broke up. What kind of loss of prosperity? Obviously, everybody was in nationalistic hooray to be free in a way in Yugoslavia, not everyone, and it ended in tragedy. But also in Czechoslovakia, maybe a lot of people were totally happy that they have their own state. But economically, it was a completely a disaster. And none of the states really worked very well because the breakup of having this kind of very small economic spaces then was, of course, the loss of the common currency, the loss of the common regulatory and custom system. It, of course, was a big tragedy, and it led to a lot of poverty, displacements, and crisis. So that are historic examples. But let's be positive and come to the recent success, of course. And the European Union has been an unimaginable success because exactly from the beginning, there was this plan to go through these steps of economic integration, free trade area, customs union, internal market, currency union, political union. And that's the idea. And you see how the success is. But we are not completed, obviously. We are not. We have not gone all the way, obviously. And I call this the missing, so-called the missing $13 trillion question. I'm counting in dollars because it's a global currency. But the missing question means that we have still much less output per capita, overall output, given that we have 450 million people. We could produce at American level of prosperity, obviously, up to 13 trillion more per year, because we are 120 million people more. And it would be possible, all Europe together, to have this kind of prosperity level like North America if we are more united, if we reduce our internal friction and our internal costs, which means all these kind of differences which we still have, and the additional. Of course, we block also the Balkan countries and Ukraine. More unity would be really the way to more prosperity. It's very simple economics. And there is no better world somewhere else outside of which the British dream of, because we have also tried to make trade agreements already with most of the world. With hostile countries, you cannot do trade agreements because trade agreements are like commercial peace treaties. We are not in full peace with Iran and with North Korea and with Russia. And so we cannot do free trade agreements. And with everybody else, wherever it was feasible and where there was a consensus, these trade agreements have been already done. They are missing, of course, sadly, with the United States of America for specific protectionist reasons, also the Americans to blame. This we have to get done. And there is also some, of course, the ratification of Mercosur is now on a little bit blocked. Hopefully, it will be very soon done. And also, there is other political issues always around. Some countries have fragile political systems, not been fully then able to do these free trade agreements. True, you know, the perfection is far, and we still have to do a lot. But absolutely, we have to improve and increase and lift on Europe to such a continental union like the United States of America, and make sure that we have all the coordination with all the EFTA-SEFTA countries, and of course include all the countries who want to join in the European Union, because this is really enormously beneficial for the prosperity of the Europeans. Yeah? Let me also reiterate that protectionism is really very dangerous and can lead to war. I don't say it's automatically leading to war, but it's always creating the condition for later escalation than leading to war. The biggest historic example is the German imperial tariffs, which have destabilized the relation with Russia in 1902, or the worst example, obviously, also. Then the terrible tariffs, the Smoot-Hawley Act, in the biggest recession of the world in 1930, then to impose tariffs on the rest of the world, and so on, escalating the global crisis in the 30s, and then the terrible consequences later. In the years after the Second World War, then part of the Bretton Woods, it was actually the one organization that failed. Was the International Trade Organization. And it was because of protectionist tendencies everywhere. and the lack of American leadership on that one. And then it was as a compromise possible to have this general agreement on trade and tariffs, this famous GATT. And then this was the compromise during the Cold War. And only when the Cold War was finished and there was better times again in 95, 94, it was possible to create a real World Trade Organization. But obviously, even in Europe, and especially the French, but also the Americans, this kind of protectionism, we are first for us and forget the rest, that is very painful and it's always ever present. And it's a major crisis and a major obstacle to our prosperity, this thinking that we alone, we can do it, yeah, be autark, try to have economic autonomy. And now in the corona crisis, you see again how these ideas pop up everywhere. And it is really totally wrong. They call it now sovereignty, autonomy, autarky, whatever kind of failed concept you can find a new term for. But they're always the same. And they are against economic science. And they hurt the consumers. And they hurt everybody. They create tensions between countries who feel unfairly rejected from the, in that case, the European market. And they always lead to massive global disturbances. So we have seen that now with China. That was a terrible trade war during the Trump years. But also now with President Biden, we lack the signals for really more openness and more free trade agreements. Buy America. Yes, you know, everybody is free to buy whatever he wants. Nobody should be ordered what to buy. And that's the idea of openness, because not by imposing fees, extra fees and tariffs on borders by gunpoint, you shouldn't make it more difficult to buy other people's product, because then ultimately it's always about reciprocity and mutual kind of imposing, because then the argument is always there, oh, look, they have done it, we have to do it as well. And then you escalate in a negative spiral upwards towards a full escalation of a trade war. And free trade is not like everybody does what he wants. It's about regulatory and standard system, which we are mutually acceptable. It's always very important to explain that this kind of regulatory alignment agreements, yeah, very much for protecting the consumers and making it clear that what you buy is really like what you want to buy, and that is safe and that is controlled, and it's also in a way according to a generally agreed principles fine. You don't want toys which are poisonous, for example, yeah, and you don't have the means to check it and to test it. The argument only that the market can decide it, the consumer basically, is insofar flawed because you need also the full information and the capability to check something. I have no capability to check an electronic device. Yeah? It must be fitting certain minimum standards of product safety. And that's also for nutrition. So we must agree on common terms, and they must be mutually agreeable for both sides, because they are not imposed treaties. We're not going to open markets with cannon boats like in the 19th century. No, both sides must have good information, must agree on the product and safety standards, and must find some kind of common room for tariffs and for inspections as well, because you must trust the authorities in the other side as well, that the products are according to these standards. And so this is really a complicated matter ultimately. But it is the way to the prosperity of our world is built on exactly this trading system. And there's always then some people ask me, yes, do we have to do a deep and comprehensive free trade agreement with the European Union? That was the debate in Ukraine, for example. Yes, you know, what other trading systems are really there than the European one? You know, there's maybe a Chinese one, a Russian one, but there is no African or Thai trading system. There's, of course, an American trading system in the form of a regulatory standards. But we have in the EU, what we did in the last 70 years, basically, is find an agreement between the various traditions of regulatory standards, and we have harmonized them in a decent way, in a mutually agreeable way, for Southern Europeans, for Northern Europeans, for the United Kingdom, obviously, as well. And we found some reasonable, and it's not so easy to find this kind of common standards for products and for 10,000 of products and for 10,000 of various services and products from all kind of genre, from medicine to steel to whatever, to electrical devices and to toys and to agriculture, to food. It's so many. It's not easy to build up this kind of substance and this kind of jurisdiction and this kind of standards in so many areas. So to work along this system, there's a lot of wisdom involved in, and there's also a lot of competence involved in, and I very much promote to work according to the European regulatory system and to join that and adopt that and work with this kind of standards, always with maybe in the beginning and when you're a transition country, with minimal compliance and with minimal kind of gradual approximation, yes, but with the target to get this done and to be fully inside the internal market or have a free trade agreement with the European Union. That should be the aim of all countries, I think so, and it will be definitely much better, and it's the way for prosperity, and we have to fight protectionism wherever it occurs. And this is the next to the security, and to have such a kind of a trade system, to have a customs union, to have a common agreed regulatory standard and system, and also the enforcement behind it and the control behind it. This is really, I think, the second most important way for economic prosperity next to security. And the third one is then the euro. I will talk about that one as well. But again, let me appeal, bigger markets produce a higher level of prosperity, if well regulated, obviously, but that's what we are. And it's important to have more countries in the European Union in that sense, and also be more open, because that increases the prosperity of everybody in these systems, which the potential opportunities and the interconnectivity, the lower and transaction cost, this is actually the way to prosperity. And that's why I say conclude free trade agreements, conclude these CFTAs, join the customs union. And that's basically the way, the second most important way to for economic prosperity. And my appeal to answer the so-called $13 trillion question, how Europe can be richer, exactly by improving our trading system, being more open, and also include more countries in our trading system. And that's what I call for. Thanks a lot.